freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710 Sports.com. What's up? Good morning. Hope you're having a good Friday. Is it Friday? It feels like Saturday. Yesterday felt like Friday. I can't believe we even have to work today. Yesterday had all the feelings of a Friday. It was the adrenaline of the what had happened the night before and heading into the weekend and the series against the Red Sox. And it feels like we shouldn't even have to be here.
Yeah, I feel like an NBA team that we expended so much energy yesterday.
Come back.
Yeah, that 6 a.m. just mad dash, right? The Dukes of Hazzard dash from the BMAC here, the fun, the fireworks, the sound, the emotion.
Why are we here today?
But this is where you dig deep, Salk.
It makes
sense. This is what the people want.
All right, well, here's what I got for you today, because that was an annoying loss for the Mariners last night, at least in my book. And I think there's going to be some different points of view on this. As they fall 2-1, Felix pretty good through seven innings, only gives up two runs. Unfortunately, the second of those ends up being the deciding run, home run. Man, he was almost out of that inning, too.
Sure was.
Bogaerts just takes him deep.
About 0-2 on that count, even.
I know. It just didn't seem to have a way to put away a good hitter in that spot. But look, here's where I'm at. I don't need the Mariners to win every game. I know the Mariners are going to lose games. I know it's going to happen. I'm not going to bail on them after they lose a game because I know it's going to happen, especially when they face good veteran pitching like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, David Price is good last night. When you face good veteran pitching, you're not going to score a ton of runs no matter who you are, and we saw that last night. So a loss is not going to damper any of my enthusiasm for a team that is still on pace to win more than 100 games. But I'm not going to be comforted by them hanging with the Red Sox either.
Correct.
That's not going to make me feel better. I already expect them to hang with the Red Sox. My expectations of them are of a 100-win team that can hang with anybody in baseball. So there's none of this, oh, well, at least they showed they could hang with the Red Sox to me. Of course they can hang with the Red Sox. They're just as good as anybody out there. And so that's not some comforting feeling for me. It makes me more critical than confident. I'm sorry.
Is there ever a loss in football or baseball or where you ever like, oh, you know what? I'm comforted. You know, I'm at peace.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
When the team's not good.
When your team is just starting to get good in football and like you have that one loss where you're like, oh, all right, well, maybe there's something here. Your quarterback comes out in the second half and nearly brings you back or something. I was comforted after the loss to Carolina in the playoffs a few years ago, the way they came back in that game. Like, yeah, I think that's possible. But the Mariners are a good team. I'm sorry. I'm not just going to say, oh, thank God they hung with the Red Sox. The mighty Red Sox came in and didn't beat them by 9 runs, so everything's fine. Like, no, it's a winnable game last night.
Very winnable.
Very winnable game, and they lost it in part to some mistakes that they made, and my expectations for them are all of a sudden a little higher than they used to.
I mean, there's going to be, just like I guess these elite football games that we kind of compared this to yesterday, right? Some of those games, the old Harbaugh, Pete Carroll games, some of those games where you have two very good teams with not many flaws, complete teams that we've called, I think both the Red Sox and the Mariners, there's going to be half a dozen plays that'll define it. Hinniger, whether he lost that thing in the lights or just misjudged it off the bat, whatever it is. I mean, that little thing or one hopping to throw down a second where Mike has been so good throwing everybody out and all of a sudden just kind of a fluke hit and a stolen base leads to a run or you know, a ball hits right off the end of Segura's bat. Like, how is that possible? If he throws it 100 times, it hits just his handle, not a finger,
knob.
Nothing else, or you have nobody out, you know, two on and can pressurize again. Just the little plays.
There's a lot of bad luck.
Little details
kind of worked against them in that game. But look,
luck happened too. I mean, Seager should have been picked off. So it's just going to be those handful of plays, and more than likely over the next 3 days, that's going to define.
And
the
these things are going
to
be magnified. That's the point that you've gotten to now as a team, where all of these little things become a lot more magnified. And if you're watching the game in the ninth inning last night, they got a chance to come back against Craig Kimbrell, who is a great closer, one of my favorites to watch. But his one weakness is he can get a little wild. And he was wild last night.
Yep.
Four straight balls to Haniger to start off. By the time Kyle Seager came up after Nelson Cruz had walked, he had thrown 10 straight balls out of the strike zone. Now, Cruz swung at two of them.
Correct.
But he had thrown 10 straight balls out of the strike zone. Kyle Seager steps up, looks at strike one, swings at strike two over his head, And then on strike three, he's looking again.
And the 0-2 on the way to Seager. A check swing. Strike three called on the inside corner with a fastball. And there's one out for the Mariners here in the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah, it's a tough AB. And unfortunately, a couple pitches later, Healy grounds into the double play to end the game. And in 16 pitches, he threw three balls in the strike zone, gets three outs.
That bothers you.
Yeah, it does. I'm not going to lie. It does. And I know there are people out there saying, you got to bunt Seager. He's been their worst hitter. I personally would not have done that. I think I could come up with five reasons why Scott Service doesn't go to the bunt there. One, Seager doesn't generally bunt. Two, the guy's thrown 10 straight balls heading into the at-bat. Why do you want to give him an out? Three, you've already got a runner in scoring position for 5, 6, 7 in your lineup. You're setting things up for what Healy and maybe Gamble. I'm not sure that's the way to do it. And then you know.
You don't want to destroy
his confidence. Going there. That's the last one.
Yes. You just don't want
to. A power hitter who's hitting fifth, who may, by the way, not even be able to bunt, I don't trust you enough in this situation to win the game. I want you to
game bunt. Game 7 in the World Series. And Kyle Seager's hitting .221 on the season. He's the worst in your lineup statistically.
Yeah, he's probably
an OPS right now less than Mike Zunino in your lineup. It's game 7 of the World Series. Kimbrel is that erratic and that wild. Ryan Healy, who is one of your hotter hitters at that moment, you take the double play out of it. You get him to second, third, and there's no free out. People say, you give up the out. We've seen already this season in moments, two times where people have thrown an erratic pitcher. He's thrown that ball out over the head. You score a run. It's game 7 of the World Series. Or the ALCS, wouldn't be the World Series, ALCS, same exact situation. Maybe you think a little differently.
Maybe.
But with 90
but
games
But I don't even
go.
Know whether the guy can bunt. I mean, this is the weird thing about baseball. I think everybody in the world should be able to bunt. I think it should be the easiest thing to do on a baseball
field. Joey Gallo did it against the shift the other day. I believe in Kyle Seager. He could do it.
Yes.
I don't know that you telling him to do it in that situation, though, works long term. Again, you always remember what managers are doing two things at once. They're managing the game in front of them, and they're managing the season at the same time. And there's a lot of relationships. And if you tell Kyle Seager in that moment, "I want you to bunt," I don't know.
But
where
what
that
has
ends
this team been built on? Right? What has been the mantra for this team?
It has not been built on the 3, 4, 5 guys bunting.
No, but it's been built on. It doesn't really matter what it takes. I'm going to do whatever I need to do for the guy next to me. I don't care about my stats. Mm-hmm. I don't care about my pride. I don't care about my numbers. I'm going to. Skip thinks this is best for the team. For the other 24 guys, sure, I don't normally do this, but for the team, so Healy can come up with second and third and it doesn't take a hit. It just takes a wild pitch, which, by the way, you already had one.
The guy's throwing 10 straight balls.
Yes.
You're giving him an out.
True.
The guy's throwing 10 straight balls.
True.
I'm sorry.
You put guys on second and third. Does it put even more pressure on an erratic guy?
No. He's got a base open.
Does it take a pass ball or a wild pitch to score that run from third? I'm not saying that this is one of those 60-40, 70-30
to me. You bunt him in that spot. And I generally do like the bunt with man on first and second, nobody out needing a run. He's then going to walk Healy. Now you got the bases loaded. You're setting it up for Gamble and Zunino. I don't know a guy who hasn't played yet in the game, and Gamble is coming in. I don't know, man.
Gamble's been pretty good in those spots. He's been one of your hottest hitters.
But all you're asking for him there is a fly ball.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, I mean, it is a debate. I think Scott obviously did the right thing. And you know what? He pushed the right button in the bottom, top of the seventh. There's no way I would have let Felix pitch a fourth time to the best hitter in baseball.
Agreed.
Right? In first, second, it looked like Felix over 100 pitches kind of lost it. You could see Scott's face. This is why you're getting paid what you're getting paid, Scott. This is why you're the manager and we're the talking heads, because you've got to make that decision. And he made the right call. And Felix gets the ground ball, first pitch, he's out of it. That place becomes electric. Yeah. And you, me, Titus, Lydia, Kyle, Howdy, everybody watching is like, good, they're going to get it done.
Here's what I like.
They're going to find a way to get it done here late in the year.
I like that we're debating this stuff. I like that it matters enough in the ninth inning for everybody who was watching that game to have an opinion on what should have happened and how it should have been handled and who should have done what and who's to blame and why Kyle Seager isn't coming up big in these spots. I mean, these are all conversations that are fun after a baseball game. And here's the last part of this for me. I am in no way dampened in how I feel about the rest of this series and the rest of this season just because they lost some stupid game last night. Yeah, they didn't execute the way you'd like them to in the ninth inning. Yeah, guess what? That's baseball. Yep. I'm psyched for Paxton tonight. I'm psyched for the rest of this series. I'm psyched that they're right in it with a Boston team that is really good, and you got an opportunity with a weekend that is going to be packed at Safeco Field, Brock, to go out there and find other ways to make up for it. That is great.
Yes, and
I'm
so excited. And I would say this lastly, and this probably comes from a little bit of the, watching my dad coach and being around just team sports. I am psyched for these guys to be on this stage. Like, as much as we have learned about this team over the course of these 68 games coming in, I'm psyched to see Mike Zunino when the stage gets really big, or Kyle Seager when the stage gets really big, or Ryan Healy, or these guys that have not been there. Boston's got a bunch of dudes that have played playoff baseball.
How psyched are you, would you say?
Hyped and jacked.
That kind of psyched?
Hyped and jacked.
7:10. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Mariners dropped Game 1 to the Red Sox last night in frustrating fashion. They put together a threat in the ninth, runners on first and second. Nobody out, but Kyle Seager struck out. Ryan Healy grounded into a double play, and that's all she wrote. Felix Hernandez, though, the positive story of this game, goes seven innings, gives up just two earned runs, the first of which you probably could have called an error. They did not. But struck out six and generally had a lot more life on his fastball. Brock throwing 91, even
sure
92
did.
At times. He was not the same pitcher we saw last start in Tampa. And if that's the guy that shows up, he doesn't need to be your ace anymore. You just need him to be, you know, serviceable or better. And he was that for sure last night, if not more.
Yeah, I think the theme of last night was a word you just said, and that is magnified. That you get on, you know, in these moments, in big games against the best competition, against a complete team, every positive is going to be magnified, and Felix was awesome last night. To see the movement, to see the fastball command, to see, as Scott Service said, the difference when you can live 89 to 91 versus a fastball that sits 85 to 87. You saw it with the best hitting lineup in baseball, other than one real mistake late in that game, or for him in the sixth inning. Outside of that, Felix was as good as we have seen him this year, and that's a real positive moving forward. Now, the positive is you got to win two out of three. Got to go win this series from this point forward. Go take two out of three from these Red Sox in your building that's going to be alive for the next 3 days.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks conclude their offseason program yesterday with a mini camp, and the team will now take about, 4 to 6 weeks off before they return for training camp at the end of July. This is the time coaches always worry about, right? Guys are kind of left to their own devices for 6 weeks before training camp. I thought what was interesting is listening to Pete talk about it. He said, well, they're going to compete during that time. I think it's good to hear that Pete is back to using that word. It seems to be the messaging in a way that, yeah, it's been the last few years, but it just hasn't felt backed up the same way. Right now, he seems to have the right kind of team to preach his message, and I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, I think I can make a pretty good argument. These are five of the most critical weeks of the entire offseason for the Seahawks. And I'll tell you a few reasons why. Number one, the Frank Clarks of the world have to use these next 5 weeks to get in the best shape of their life. There can't be a hamstring issue or a calf issue or a pulled muscle issue that's going to keep you out of training camp. Number two, I would love to see a deal done in the days right before training camp with a Dwayne Brown or a Tyler Lockett or one of these others that they have been negotiating with. And then number three, and most important, stay healthy. These rookies haven't quite taken break, Mike, because families and friends are coming in for the next couple days for a seminar to sit down and really wade through the dangerous waters. And all we need to do is look back at last year with a pocket full of money and some of the decisions these guys, and in fact Malik McDowell, made that really sabotaged, unfortunately, his career and in some way the team as well. 5 big weeks here before training camp begins.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
College World Series, and the Huskies look to get underway tomorrow night in Omaha. First time they have been in this tournament. Pretty amazing. They'll face Mississippi State at 5 o'clock on ESPN. We're able to get confirmation. Is Joe Damaris pitching? I assume he is, right? That's their guy. He's kind of an interesting kid to watch, man. I mean, I was chatting back and forth with Jason Churchill on Twitter about him. As exactly the type of pitcher that Jerry DePoto seems to like. Now, he doesn't throw all that hard. He's sort of a Mike Leake type pitcher, where he's not one of these guys coming and blowing you away with velocity, but he understands how to pitch, understands how to get outs, and he's been a bulldog for them this year. So looking forward to seeing what he does tomorrow night.
In Omaha.
Yeah.
I like Omaha. Omaha rings pretty true here in Seattle, as we own Peyton Manning and many of his trips to Omaha and everything else through the years. Speaking of a team that hasn't been there, right, versus a team that has, Mississippi State has been in this College World Series. They found a lot of success. The University of Washington's making their first trip, and I can't wait for the exposure. The exposure for these kids, the exposure for the skipper, the exposure, again, for Jen Cohen and what she's done in this athletic department. And it's going to be awfully fun to watch a team, the first time in the history of their program, play in Omaha on this stage.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know every day at 7:10. Because I said he was a Bulldog, and then I was going to say he goes tonight against the Bulldogs.
Oh,
but then I kind of panicked and was like, wait, is Mississippi State the Bulldogs? I think they are, but I don't want to sound like an idiot, so I just stopped. But they are the Bulldogs, right?
Are they in the SEC?
Yes.
Either Bulldogs or Tigers. I know. Man, they don't get too complicated.
I knew they were the Bulldogs, but then I had this moment of panic where I just wasn't sure, and I didn't want to say it. And so
the Ole Miss is...
They're the Rebels.
In the Alabama
end. I know what they are. Thank you. They have that big elephant for some reason. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And he wears a hat and the checkered pants. Like, the whole thing is very confusing what they're doing down there. We'll talk a little more about Felix coming up in 15 minutes. That was the best news last night. Right now, the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
You want to take care of him? Take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
We're doing great.
You're heading to the summer solstice in Fremont? You guys do that every year, right? You go up there over the weekend?
Who's that?
You? No.
Me?
Yeah, no. You're not heading to the parade, summer solstice parade? Oh, you don't do that?
You ever been to the summer solstice parade?
I've never been there.
No. Really? You know what goes on there, right?
What is that?
A lot of people are naked.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
Like right.
A lot of naked people running around Fremont.
More on their bikes, right? Don't they ride their bikes?
Yeah, that's
more?
True. Yeah. Now, there's some people are walking, though. They're all over the map.
That could be problematic, can it?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's part
They're painted, right?
Well, you think. I mean, most are.
But, yeah.
That's, I think, part of the attraction, John, is you go down to see if maybe it's sort of like when watching NASCAR for the crashes.
Yeah.
Right. You got to watch the naked people on their bikes to see what happens.
That's why the guy took his shirt off last night when he got that foul ball. He was just preempting what's going to be coming over the weekend in Fremont for sure.
What'd you learn from minicamp, John? It's in the books. What'd you learn?
Well, I think what we learned is I think there's been a lot of progress made on the offensive side of the ball, and I think they're in the beginning of getting things settled on the defensive side because obviously a lot of work has to happen on the defense because of all the changes there. But I think you can see that the offensive line came out of this looking pretty good. I think that even when you talk to Russell Wilson, he liked the continuity of the offensive line. I think you can see from talking to Russell that so far the relationship with Brian Schottenheimer is a very good one. Progress. You know, it's interesting. I know we were talking about the wide receiver position yesterday. It looks like David Moore has really taken a big run at things where it was like, okay, is he going to make the team? But now I think he's making a run at the number three spot at the receiver position. So we see that. I think you can see a good vibe coming from the tight ends. I talked to Ed Dixon yesterday, and Ed not only thinks he's going to be involved as a blocker, but I think he's had 60 catch seasons, so he thinks he's going to get more involved in the passing offense. So I think a lot of positive things about the offense, and a lot of things that are still trying to figure out on the defensive side.
You know, John, we talk a lot about this culture and competition and for the players, right? For the kickers, for the wide receivers. Do you feel, as I do a little bit, that maybe the most energized guy in that building when it comes to competitions, the head coach, that he actually gets back to the very roots of what he wants so badly?
Yeah, but I think he's always that way. I think, he's extra energized now because there's so many new things that he has to try to make sure are going right. But I don't know if we've ever seen him where he's not energized. I think that, whether it's a preseason game, whether it's a practice. I think that, I think what he likes is he, particularly when you got new guys in the secondary, being a former defensive back coach, I think he likes what he sees there. I think he's energized with what's happened with Shaquille Griffin and all the figuring out what to do with the changes if Earl Thomas is not going to be there. But no, I think that I don't think I've ever seen him not energized.
John, I read a headline, I think it was this morning, that said Jimmy Garoppolo did not look very good at Niners minicamp. I have to assume it was a miss, like some sort of typo, because I'm sure he looked good, but maybe he didn't play all that well. What's going on with Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco?
Probably just settling in because I think the expectations for that team and for Jimmy Garoppolo are way too high. He comes back and he wins the last five games last year, and now you knew there's going to be some adjustments because, again, the receiving core isn't the best, and they need to do it. But I think it's just a matter, it's like, okay, maybe he's settling in, and as he settles in, it's not going to be as great as everybody thinks, but I think he's going to be a very good quarterback.
How many How many games does that team win this year?
I think 7.
And how many games did the Seahawks win this year?
9 or 10.
And how many games does Arizona win?
6.
And how many games does the Rams win?
I say 11.
I know.
11 games.
11.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Have you checked their schedules on that? Are you confident based on the schedule or just based on how the team feels?
No, just based on a lot of things. I mean, right. You can look at the metrics.
It's a database, bro. It spits it out.
I mean, you can look at the metrics. I mean, like, for example, I mean, here's a Ram team that scored 30 points, and they're probably not going to score 30 points a game this year, but their defense is probably going to give up, like, about 20. And so if you give up, let's say you score 27 and you give up 20, I mean, you're probably going to be, 11-12 win team. I think that you look at Seattle, I think they'll be very good. They'll be much, much better running the ball. I think they'll still give up 20, but they're probably going to score 23, 24 points a game.
All right, here's the other thing. Is this new? Jerry Austin's been hired out of the booth to go work for John Gruden in Oakland?
How about that?
I mean, he was terrible in the booth. Why? What?
Clock, well, he's not going to be in the booth
management
now.
Management specialist.
What is Jerry Austin going to be doing for John Gruden?
Helping out with decisions on replays and helping out on any kind of officiating controversy.
But he was awful at that in the booth.
Is he 82 or 92 now, Jerry? Do you know?
Think about 82.
Yeah. He can't be the best person for that job.
It reacts real quickly.
Are you talking about the broadcasting part of it or his eyes?
Well, didn't he keep changing his mind on stuff? Like, he was not good in the... Like, it would be one thing if they wanted to hire Pereira or something, but why would you hire Jerry Austin? He wasn't good at it.
Well, because they work together and he trusts him.
That's ridiculous. It's wild card time.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton,
yes.
It's time for Fan Fiction Friday.
Oh, boy.
John Clayton receives a package that's addressed to his arch nemesis, a hipster food truck owner played by Ben Affleck. And in a moment of weakness, Clayton opens the package. He is shocked to find that inside the package is an assortment of weapons and a letter that says, 24 hours or else. Watch in this phone booth-inspired thriller as Clayton must decipher his task and risk receiving the fate that was due Ben Affleck with the help of his best friend, a talking bearded dragon played by Boy Howdy. What do you think?
I'm trying to figure out where the dragon plays into it.
That
guy's kind of a throw-in. It was like, did casting just have to say, can you get something for me? Well, I need something medieval.
Is this animated?
Yeah. So
animated dragon or...
Oh, yeah, CGI.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Now, what I would imagine is that I like this a lot because now I'm like, I wish it wasn't Ben Affleck. I wish it was Kiefer Sutherland because now I can play 24 because now I got 24 hours to figure out what I'm going to have to try to do and trying to get all these people down. So
yeah, this feels more like an episodic TV show than it does a movie.
Yeah, John, 24. Quinn,
John, I could really see you as Jack Bauer.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that compliment.
Hey, John, do me a favor. This weekend, can you do just one thing between now and Monday morning when we chat with you?
Yeah.
Go for a run.
Oh,
bro, it's going to be 70, 75.
You've got time. All the football teams have gone away for 6 weeks. What could you possibly have to do?
Nothing the database needs entered in more important than a 20 to 30 minute run.
I still have 46 data bursts to get.
How long could that possibly take? John, goodbye. Please go do something productive. We'll
love you, man.
There you go. John Clayton with us every single day at 7:15. Why are you hiring Jerry Austin? What did Jerry Austin do in the booth that made somebody say, you know what? I got to have that guy on my staff.
Now, I found old people have a calming presence sometimes. I think that might be more like he might be more like a support Jerry Austin.
Is he going to hire like Matt Millen and what's that guy's name? Paul McGuire next? I just was so inspired by what Paul McGuire used to say in that Sunday Night Football.
You didn't see the Theismann had a workout. They cut Hackenberg. They're bringing Theismann in for a little workout.
What's he doing? I don't understand. Yes. All right. You can always listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. We certainly had a caller yesterday who was excited about it. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. I want to spend a couple of minutes on Felix Hernandez. By the way, everybody with your opinions on what should have happened last night. Phone lines are open, bro. 206-421-3776. You want to comment on this stuff. You don't have to just, hide behind anonymity on the text machine. You can always jump on the board, the phone lines. 206-421-3776. Felix was what? It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Kings Court up on its feet in left field. Here comes the 1-2 pitch. Martinez swings and he misses. A changeup from the King. It's J.D. Martinez. 4 strikeouts through 3 innings for Felix Hernandez.
Pretty impressive outing for Felix Hernandez, especially coming off the disaster in Tampa a week ago, Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. I don't think most people saw that coming. We were asked to predict yesterday, Brock, and I thought I had the two runs right. But I didn't think he'd make it out of the fifth.
You said 4 2/3.
Yeah.
I said 6 and a run. Doggone you, Haniger.
And look at him. He ends up going 7 innings, only gives up.
I mean, we went on Price is Right. I mean, we're both under.
Yes.
So we did not go over expectations
at all. Guess we would have been okay. Felix, pretty happy with how we felt last night.
No, it was a fastball. Fastball command. It was a big thing for me. I mean, that's the big thing for me every game. So in the motions, I just got to go out there and be me. You know, be aggressive, be me, be do whatever's possible, just keep it off in the game. And you know, had a good change, I had a good curveball, and Slider came back, so it was pretty good.
And we've seen that. We've seen him have the changeup. We've seen him have the curveball for sure this year, and then he kind of added in the slider this year last night. But what we haven't seen is a fastball throwing 91, 92 even on occasion.
The fastball, the moves.
That is a fastball that Felix can win with.
Really good, man.
Where did it come from? Thanks, Felix. Thanks, Fifi. Where did it come from?
Felix was pretty good.
He really good, man.
He was actually really good, man.
That's pretty good.
For Felix,
I'm ready to go.
Against the best hitting lineup in all of baseball, that was really good, man. Where did that come from? That came from the stage, man.
So it's just adrenaline?
I think so. Now, people will say he threw off a mound this week. He continues to tweak things.
I think I'm with you. I think it's adrenaline.
There's bullpen sessions that have been better. If you have to pin me against this wall.
And the Red Sox are in town, and I'm in my home stadium, all of the above, right?
I got all those K cards still, which I wish you would put down in that seventh inning or sixth inning, whenever Bogart, you don't need to throw a fastball.
Well, I don't know. You got to do something to recreate this adrenaline. I mean, if that's what it takes to get Felix... How does adrenaline give him 6 miles an hour on the fastball, though? Like, I get it. Adrenaline can help you. Maybe gives you a tick. Brock, he was 86 with the fastball when he was in Tampa. Mm. He was up to 92 yesterday. You're telling me it gave him 5 or 6 miles an hour on the
fastball?
Who
in the heck is that guy on the mound?
I don't know who he was. This guy was surprised. Scott wasn't.
He used to bring out the best in the best players, and he's been a very good player in this league for a long time. So, you know, didn't surprise me at all. I thought, you know, back against the wall, you got to show people you still got it against probably the best offensive club in the league. You still got it.
And to be fair, he didn't live at 92. I mean, he still lived at 89, 90.
He lived at 90.
Yeah, 89.
He lived around 90. I saw a lot of pitches at 90, bunch at 91, and he touched 92.
Yep.
A week ago, he lived at 86.
Yep.
Brock, that is a
major difference.
You ever
tried to work in the Tropicana Dome?
Yeah, Brock, still, 5 miles an hour?
Right.
Come on. That is a huge difference, and it was good to see. Clayton's in Olympia. Good morning, Clayton.
Morning, guys.
What's up?
I'm going to agree with you. I think it was the best start of the season for him. He gets fired up for big games. I think he just proves the theory. He's better when the spotlight's on him when it's a hot game.
But, Clayton, where is that? Where has that been? That's, what, his 14th start of the season? Where is that? We saw an opening day. We've seen, you know, like against Tampa, he was great.
And let me ask you a specific question then, Clayton. Can he do that again? Sure. Because next time he'll face the Yankees, all right. But after that, the Red Sox and Yankees disappear. Can he do that against other teams too?
I think he has it in him. I just think he needs to learn how to pitch as an old guy. You know, the 92 stuff he can't rely on. He needs to go more off speed and learn how to locate a little bit better.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I just wonder if there is a job that we'll be judging Scott Servais on this year. I don't think it's the bullpen management or whether he bunts in the ninth. Mm. It's how can he find a way mentally to get and it's not just him. It's Mel Stottlemyre and the rest of that coaching staff. How do they get Felix into the mentality, Brock, that he was in last night more often?
You like my Tom Jackson?
Because he's going to be inconsistent. I don't expect Felix to be like that every single night. But how do they get Felix to look like that and feel like that against division opponents and in other games that don't feel quite
You feel rested today?
Yes.
Bro, you took a 2.5 hour nap yesterday. I don't know how that's
possible.
It
wasn't a nap so much as my entire body felt cryogenically frozen. I just shut down.
2.5 hour shutdown.
Yeah.
So you're well rested. Do you think you have some time this weekend? Do you think you could jerry rig the schedule and have Felix only pitch night games against great competition? If you're only going to get 25 or 28 starts.
Well, you got the Yankees and Red Sox coming back next week, so he'll have another shot.
Right.
Okay.
Night games,
yes,
against non-division opponents,
correct,
that have like blue blood history.
Right. Right. You got that?
Perfect. Perfect.
How many we got left?
If when that situation comes up, Felix is your guy. 206-421-3776. Stanley's upset about the way things ended last night. Stanley, the ninth made you mad?
Hey, Brock. Peace off. Love your show. You guys do a great job. I was at the game right up the third baseline last night.
Awesome.
I grew up watching a lot of Dodger games. I thought, what would the Dodgers do at this point? There's no doubt that they would. First of all, if he put fun, they would have substituted, they would have pitched hit. See? Second of all, they would have definitely laid down the punt. Hmm. They played small ball. I think he should have tried the punt. Where's Leonis Martin when you need him? But I think punting would have definitely been good.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that last night.
Thank you, Stanley.
It's too bad Leonis Martin wasn't there to pinch hit for Kyle Seager.
Yeah, well, they pinch ran for Cruzy, obviously. Could you pinch hit somebody?
Yeah, probably Romine. I would probably pinch hit Romine.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I got to say, man, I mean, the guy had thrown 10 straight balls. You've got your number 5 hitter up. You probably are going to want to pinch hit a bad player for him in that spot.
Yeah, his last 6 pitches, he saw 6 strikes. Wasn't close to
any of those. Look, I'm no Kyle Seager fan at the moment. I think his bat has been an atrocity. But he's still your number 5 hitter, and you're still going to need him, and you still expect that he's going to come out of this thing, and you got to give him an opportunity there. I'm sorry. A guy's thrown 10 straight balls. You have an opportunity to try to get Kyle Seager going, and what does a hit do for his confidence?
Okay, so if he didn't throw 10 straight balls, if he'd thrown 6 balls and 4 strikes and they fouled some off in that situation, all right, and you have first and second in the ninth inning with nobody out, Ryan Healy's hit 4 bombs in the last 3 days, and his bat has come to life, and actually Ben Gamel has been your second best hitter largely for the last month. So you've got those two coming up in the lineup. Had Kimbrel not thrown 10 balls?
I still probably don't do it, but I'd think about it, but I still probably don't do it.
Yeah.
He's your number 5 hitter, man. I think that you're playing the long game with him, and I don't think you can make that call if you're Scott Servais.
Yeah, the only thing I would think about, and again, I would come back at, is this year's team. This group's whole identity of this year's team is I don't really care like who I am and what my stats are.
To do something,
everything
so
else
unfamiliar to him.
So he just doesn't have the skill or the talent.
Can somebody look up how many sacrifice bunts Kyle Seager has in the last 4 years?
Mm.
Not maybe as a rookie or two when he first came up and he was sort of a second baseman still, but since he grew his power source, how many sacrifice bunts do you think Kyle Seager has?
How many stolen bases? He had one last night. Well, actually,
it's written in our system as stolen base, but it for whatever reason seems to have a quotes around it.
Yes.
Like, this isn't a real stolen base.
The left-hander's pitch to Heredia turns the bunt, and he takes it a ball. The throw down to second base. Seager to third. No throw to third. Kyle Seager has just swiped third base. Holy smokes. Vasquez's throw down to the shortstop, Bogarts, and Seager didn't hesitate. Instead of going back to second, he bolted for third. And Seager is able to get in.
Dude, we got that play in Little League. Seriously, that's a really good play in Little League. You're trying to get that catcher to make the long throw down
right
to second so you can get to third.
Right. Scott Servais said that it was pretty Little League, yeah.
Yeah, we've been working on that play. It's the bunt through, get picked off at second. If you know you're going to be out by 20 feet, you just take off for third, put your head down, and wish. It worked out great. It actually was a pretty instinctive play by Kyle. He knew he was going to be out there, threw behind him, and it worked out great. So he chalked up another stolen base.
So
now, I get it, man.
Brock, his last sacrifice was in 2014.
Yes.
He has 3 total since his rookie year.
I'm being a little... I'll admit, that first pitch of that at bat, I wasn't saying bunt. And if Stanley, you were, and some of you others, God bless you. You know, we just see this a little bit differently. I was not thinking bunt. I was thinking, great, here is a chance for Kyle. One of the best in the game in the late innings, right? He's tied right up there near the top in home run. You don't even need a home run in that case. Just put one in the gap.
You're given 3 chances just to hit a single, man.
Yep.
I mean, there's a bunch of reasons why you don't do it. I generally do like the bunt in that spot, but not with the middle of the order.
Now, the odds there, though, for him, I was thinking get it done, but the odds, 9 out of 10, where he were going to strike out or roll into a double play.
Yeah.
That's what I felt in that moment, unfortunately,
well,
with
what
his bat has been.
And that's a bigger problem, is that, unfortunately, Kyle Seager just doesn't look very good right now.
Yeah.
And that's not a Scott Servais problem. Kyle Seager needs to hit. He's one of the players that is being counted on. His glove has been tremendous this year. He's playing some of the best defense of his career. His bat has been troubling.
Yes.
It really is. If his bat gets going, That's when this team, I think you'll see them take off even more. So, you know, I think Scott Service just biding his time and waiting. Appreciate some of the phone calls. Good to see you can just sort of have an opinion on these things. It's great. We will have open phone lines coming up in 20 minutes at 8 o'clock on any subject, whatever you want. That's been our Friday regular deal. We'll do that at 8. Right after Coors Light's Blue 42 and some great growth for an exciting rookie. Next on Brock and Salk.
This is a brand new Felix, people.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready? Right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42, and then here in 15 minutes, phone lines open 100%. Whatever argument you want to make on any subject, baseball, football, all other sports combined, 206-421-3776. It's been a lot of fun the last few weeks on a Friday, so here's your chance, 206-421-3776. Beat the rush. Looks like a couple lines are open right now. All right, Brock, question number one for you. Tyler Lockett spoke yesterday with the media and said that he wasn't 100% last year, that he was maybe 75% when he was playing. A, did you notice? And B, where do you think he is now?
Yeah, I do. Last year, you did see growth. I bet early in the year, he was closer to 60%. And by the end of the year, maybe he was 80%. So overall, he was 75%. And he's a whole lot closer to 100%. That's a good thing. Here was Tyler speaking exactly to that yesterday.
I'd probably say about 75, 80%. But I mean, it didn't stop me from still going out there and doing my same job, the same role that I was given. Still was getting open against people. So, I mean, the thing is, it doesn't matter how you feel when you go out there. If you go out there, it's time to go. You can't make excuses if you don't get open. You can't make excuses if you don't catch the pass. If you out there, everybody expects you to do the same thing if you wasn't hurt.
And I think the area you saw that the most was just the extreme suddenness. A lot of guys, when they come back from injury, and I remember actually watching Mookie Betts a couple weeks ago as they were talking about him training back from his abdominal injury, and he's out there sprinting, right, full speed. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, if you can run full speed, why the heck can't you play? Because it's the suddenness, man. You know that from shagging balls. It is that quick burst coming in and out of cuts. Like, you could train, you and I could spend 6 months and actually get our straight-ahead speed to be pretty good, you know, even at 40 years of age. Not what it was at 20. But 90%, 80%. Now, what you couldn't get is that sudden explosion. And that's where he was really, you know, missing it. And that 25%, if he was 75%, and watching him in camp, he's, I don't think is 100, but he's 90 to 95. Good. And that is a really good thing for a receiving corps that's going to need him.
You can see it in the rush and the run backs. I mean, I didn't feel like he was very good in the
when he got going, like when he got going and he could, you know, hit.
Punt return, kick return. He just didn't look the same sort of explosive that he had.
Didn't look like the joystick he's capable of being.
Remember how good that was as a rookie in preseason? That was nuts. All right, question number two. Speaking of rookies, Shaquem Griffin. What'd you see? How has he grown here over the course of first rookie camp and then OTAs and mini camp?
I was glad to hear this from Pete Carroll yesterday because he was such a story with Shaquem leading into the draft. You and I celebrated that pick as hard as we did Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett and Alex Collins over the years of guys that we really wanted to see Seahawks. And rookie minicamp was okay. The OTAs, the two sessions I watched, it was all right. But there was nothing that stood out. You just did not see a flash. And over the last 3 days, as Coach Carroll will tell you here, the light bulb went on.
What was really positive was how he finished up in the offseason. Moving back into an inside spot, you know, for him was new, and he had a lot to learn, a lot to pick up. And I think just in the process of it, and a guy that wants to do really right and do things, you know, like just as the coaches are coaching him up, you know, we didn't see him really cut loose until the last, really in this camp, he really felt comfortable and started flying around, and you could see how fast he is and the acceleration that he has. It's really unique.
This is that thinking versus reacting. Okay, I got to think I got to be in this spot. Okay, now if this number two release is this way, I've got to do this. And then this coverage is going to adjust to this or this month. You're just thinking. There's just cluttered. You have a cluttered mind. And when you have a cluttered mind, you cannot react and cut it loose. Good to see that over the last few days, got more comfortable and you could start to feel that speed.
Question number three. A chance to sit down with Russell Wilson yesterday and spend some time talking, not just about where he's at in the offense, but about the running game specifically. What'd you take out of it?
There were a couple little, I'm not going to say subtle shots. That's too much. But Russell would have never said a few of these things last year or the year before. you would, he would say, oh, we're going to be great. Everything's going to be great. Everything on the O-line is awesome. You know, all these moving pieces is great. That wasn't the case. Here was one of a couple opportunities where Russell made it pretty clear that group up front's got to be better.
I think that we actually have a consistency up front right now, you know, with the ones in particular, which we never really had. We always kind of trade places and put people in, but, you know, which is good. But then at the same time, there's no consistency. And with the line in particular, those five guys, you need that. You need that consistency. You need that nucleus of those five. And I think we have that.
We actually have continuity.
What about where he said they might run more than one play? I like that one. Do we have that?
Yeah, there were a few others.
Hey, maybe we'll run something other than just outside zone now and
I've
again.
Never had this. You know, we actually have a group that can play together. We're going to run more than just outside zone. On third and one and third and two in a league where you have to run it, we're going to be able to run for first. I mean, those are all things that would not have been said last year or the year before that.
Those are all
the year
direct shots at Daryl Bevel and Tom Cable.
Yeah, and Tom Cable, you know, did he take a little subtle one down in Oakland saying we should have had two championships? So great to be reunited with Marshawn Lynch and everything else. Yeah. What was that a relationship that had tension and friction? It did. It did. It may be in a healthy tension when they were winning, but there was a little bit of friction point. I love hearing some of that from Russell. You know that. I love some of just the human, you know, kind of humanness of him, the humanity of him, and a little bit of backbone coming out. To me, that's a good thing.
All right, that's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. We actually got to see a little of Russell the human yesterday. That was kind of fun.
Humanness? Is that a word?
Sure. Nah, let's go with humanness.
Yeah, probably.
Personness?
Humanity.
Peopleness?
Yeah, I know.
206-421-3776.
Mr. Unlimited.
There it is. He's so unlimited.
You did it good, too. He liked your unlimited.
Well, I talked because I was all in on it.
For sure.
We're unlimited together. 206-421-3776. Every Friday, we've been opening up the phone lines for whatever argument you want to make. Something you've been trying to tell your friend. Something you've been trying to tell your husband or wife. Something you've been trying to tell your kids. Something you've been complaining about. Something you've been enjoying. Whatever it is in sports, Mariners, baseball, Seahawks, football, hockey coming, golf, U.S. Open, soccer, World Cup, you name it. 206-421-3776. Anything that you want to get off your chest, this is your chance to do it. Got a line or two open. Jump aboard. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Mr. Unlimited.